Welcome to the PeopleStack podcast, where we discuss the intersection of people, work, and technology. I'm your host, Jen Bunk, founder of Jen Bunk Ventures and creator of PeopleStack Academy. My guest for this episode is Sarah Johnson, National Outreach Manager for Tech Girls. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Excited to talk to you about Tech Girls and all the wonderful stuff you ladies have going on and some of your other experiences as well. So let's jump right in. And first, just tell us a little bit about Tech Girls, how it came to be, and what exciting projects the gals are working on right now.
Exciting is definitely the word to describe it. We are a nonprofit that's based in Philadelphia. Our mission is to inspire girls to explore the possibilities of technology to empower their future careers. So what we do is we run workshops and provide curriculum so that other people can run workshops to give girls hands-on experience with technology. We have about 35 different topics, ranging from programming, making a website, to user experience, and animation, and podcasting. And cool. We just run these workshops and help people run workshops in an effort to get girls engaged with technology and show them all the different ways that technology can empower their future careers.
That's great. I hadn't realized that there's 35 different topics. So the obvious stuff that I think folks might assume that you help girls learn to do is to code. So I did hear that on the list. But I think that's very cool that, like you mentioned, podcasting, for example, or other areas for getting engaged with technology. I think that's really great.
Yeah, and obviously coding is a huge part of technology because, you know, it powers computers and websites and so many different things that we use on a daily basis. But we do really want to show girls that there's more to tech than coding, and that so many different industries are powered by technology, that they're really tools that are a part of all of our lives. And in order to be really successful, we all need to learn how to use these tools to achieve what we're passionate about.
Yeah, that's great. I was checking out the Tech Girls website. And by the way, it's girls with a Z, if anybody's wanting to check it out. So is the Tech Girls website the best way for people to check out more and find out more about it?
Yeah, techgirls.org. And we're also pretty active on Facebook and Twitter. And we have a YouTube channel where you can see me, but also see some of the girls in the workshops, which is way more interesting.
That's very cool. That's very cool. So they could see what happens in real time. That's really cool. So on your website, I saw that you have a new thing that's called Tech Shops in a Box. So Tech Shops also with a Z, Tech Shops in a Box. And I love the idea about it. So I was hoping you can share a little bit about what that is, and we can talk a little bit more about that. So what's Tech Shops in a Box?
Absolutely. Tech Shops in a Box is what we call our free curriculum for running a workshop in your community. And what I think is really neat about it is the background story. We started out running workshops in Philadelphia, where we would have 20 girls come into a room with a technology professional, and they would get hands-on experience with whatever the technology was. Plus, they would get to meet a role model, being that technology professional in the room who was leading the workshop. The great news, the great problem that we had, was that we would end up with another 20 to 40 girls on the waiting list for each of these free workshops. Mm-hmm. So it was clear that the girls really like the technology and want to learn more about it, but it was also clear that we couldn't do this by ourselves. And so we, 2 years ago, we published the workshop plans and called them Tech Shops in a Box, so that anybody can use them anywhere around the world to run a workshop.
Cool. So what's in the box if someone were to request one of these things? What would you get?
So I want to be clear that it's a virtual box, because we have received the question of when someone's going to get their box in the mail.
Okay.
It's each workshop topic has a document that outlines what to teach. Usually has a link to a slideshow of, you know, slides that are already made that you can just run through to present the workshop. It'll have links to exercises that we use, or hands-on activities. Some of them are web-based, some of them are hardware based, so you would need to have those hardware kits, but it's really a full workshop plan that we've used and had tested and approved by middle school girls. We also have this thing that we call a playbook, which is our best practices and lessons learned over the last 5 years. It includes things like checklists and templates for permission forms, anything that we found was really helpful in organizing the logistics of the workshop in addition to the content.
Got it. And these are freely available on your website?
Absolutely. We have a web form that we ask you to fill out just so we can get data on, you know, who's using this and who's interested in helping girls learn about technology. But once you fill out that web form, you get free access to all 35 workshop topics that we have and all the new ones that we'll be adding this year.
Okay. And this is specifically geared toward middle school girls. Why that age range in particular?
Yeah, we choose middle school girls because the research is showing that high school girls are opting out of STEM classes. And we wanted to get the girls in a room before they change their mind about technology and get them in a room with their peers so that they can see they're not the only girl. And too often still we hear about high school classes where there's only one girl in the STEM elective or the technology elective in a school. Mm-hmm. And we hear from the parents that their kid is the only girl who they know who's interested in computers or interested in technology. And when we bring them into the room together, they just light up. We've had girls come out of their shell where the parents say, you know, please help her engage. She's really quiet and shy. And then that girl will end up being the most talkative one in the room because she now has the opportunity to meet other girls who like what she likes, to do what she likes with people that she's comfortable with.
Yeah, it's amazing what can happen when you go from, I didn't realize that I was the only one. So I thought I was the only one that liked this kind of stuff. And especially for middle school girls, I can remember what it was like being a middle school girl. And that's a really rough time for a lot of girls and boys too. And so especially if you're the quote unquote geek in the class, I could see like how eyes would just light up. But like, wow, I'm not the only one like this. But even more than that, like to become engaged in it and to be like, wow, I can, here's something that I can get even better at and that I can, you know, launch a future of a career from or something like that. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it's nice, you know, from my experience as well, to find friends that you can identify with who also like the technology that you're passionate about. And even more than that, you know, besides giving those girls who think that they're the only one a place to find friends, we're also trying to build a space where girls who may not have considered technology as something they were passionate about, can explore a new topic, a new angle. You know, we have topics like infographics, which really focus on content research and graphic design. It's drawing on the computer, you know? Yeah. So really expanding what's our definition of technology.
Yeah, that's great. So who do you see using or who is already using the tech shops in a box? Because I see this being applicable in lots of different areas.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about it is that so many different people and organizations can use the tech shops in a box. What we've seen, there's like four different categories. One of them is other nonprofits. So after school programs, libraries are a big supporter and user of the tech shops in a box. They usually have kids or girls who are coming to programs, and they want to bring technology into their existing programming. So we can help them do that. Technology professionals, of course, are big category for us, whether it's a technology company or just an IT department within a company, or just a group of developers who maybe have a meetup once a month and want to do something for their community. Those have been really great supporters of tech shops in a box. And the other categories are university students. Students who are either part of a student organization focused on technology or women and girls, and also students who are majoring in a technology field. It's a great way for them to reinforce what they're learning and also give themselves a more leadership experience. And I mean, to be blunt, it's a resume builder too.
Really, it is.
Yeah, when you come together and share your passion for what you're learning, as well as putting on an event. I mean, the actual organization of the event and teaching it, or helping to teach it as a teaching assistant, all of that are great skills that you can develop.
Yeah, and I could see that as a former university professor, and I could see faculty as folks who can facilitate this process, you know, because faculty are often involved in community outreach and in organizing student groups and things like that. So I particularly say computer science faculty and stuff like that, but even just other faculty who want to get more involved and want to not only help their fellow students, their students build their resumes, but also build the community as well.
Absolutely. And building the community, and you learn so much when you turn around and share what you know with someone else.
Yeah. So one last question about the tech shops in the box, and then I'm going to shift a little bit. What if there's someone out there who's considering, like, oh yeah, I think it would be so awesome to teach middle school girls how to code or how to do design or how to do podcasts, but I don't know anything about that myself. Is this sort of, do you need to have like a base level competency in this stuff, or is it something that you can kind of learn as you go as well?
So that's a good question. When I say that there's a huge amount of people who could help with Tech Shops in a Box and organizing a workshop, I really do mean that, because while you may need to know some of the technology in order to be an instructor for it, you also need somebody to organize the workshop and manage the logistics.
Yeah.
So if you're passionate about this, but you don't feel like you could lead a workshop about, say, HTML and CSS, you can be the organizer, and you can find a venue and schedule the time and contact girls in the area to get them to come and answer any questions as people are registering for the event.
Yeah.
And we can help you connect with other people in your area to find volunteers, whether you're missing an instructor or teaching assistants, or if you want to be the instructor and are missing someone who can do the logistics, we're here to help. So I certainly encourage anyone who has any interest in this to contact Tech Girls, and then we'll figure out what's missing and help you fill in the blanks.
Great. Absolutely. Okay. So shifting the conversation a little bit, I know that you know how to code, correct? You learned how to code when you were younger. So I'd like to talk a little bit about your experience learning to code and how that has shaped how you sort of approach relating to girls in the Tech Girls environment. So how old were you when you learned to code?
I was my early 20s.
Okay.
And I learned how to code.
Yep. Okay.
So I feel like I came to it a little bit late. But what was most interesting to me was it wasn't in school. It wasn't for a job. It was just a friend told me that HTML and computers were all based on languages. And I was a French major originally.
Yeah.
I love to learn languages. And nobody had ever told me that computers are based on languages. And as soon as I started learning HTML, it made perfect sense to me, and I picked it up so quickly because I understood syntax, grammar, and then there was a visual output, which was so much more rewarding than just crafting a sentence in French.
That's right. You get to click the go button and see it say "Hello world." Yes, I think for those of us who have, I should admit, I don't want people to get the wrong idea. I have unsuccessfully tried to learn to code several times. I know basic HTML, a little bit of CSS. I'm a copy paste master. You know, I can copy paste stuff. I know it enough, but I can't like write it from scratch. I need to like sort of put the pieces together. But yeah, I definitely remember the experience of like going through the step by step and, oh my gosh, I just made Hello World appear on the screen. But I do love the language analogy though, that that essentially it's talking to computers, it's talking to the machines. So talk a little bit more about it. What was the hardest part of the experience for you?
The hardest part was when I went back to school. So I was in college for 2 years and decided that I was bored in the classroom and wanted to start working. And I worked for a little while and then started taking classes part-time online. And it took another I think it was a total of 7 years by the time I finally got my bachelor's degree. And halfway through, I really wanted to give up. But I had a boss who encouraged me and said that, you know, you'll have so many more opportunities if you just stick with this. So really for me, the challenge wasn't as much of learning the code and learning the technology as it was finishing the degree.
Got it. So you learned to code as part of, that was part of your university credits, as part of the classes that you took in
yeah,
school?
Exactly. So I started out on my own from a friend like telling me about HTML and CSS and then giving me a book. And I started to play around with websites. Mm-hmm. And then I decided that this was something that I wanted to learn more about and that was worthwhile actually pursuing a bachelor's degree in. So I got a degree in computing technology, which is different than computer science, and really gave me an introduction to a variety of different technologies, but only like an introduction to each one, which is an incredible preparation for Tech Girls, where all of our workshops are introductions to a bunch of different technology topics.
That's great. That's great. So I want to get a little bit into the weeds and the coding process. I'd like to ask folks who know how to code this question, because I liken it to writing. That if I think about the mental space that one would need to be in, full well knowing that I don't code like a lot, but I've tried it before, in sort of the mental space that I was in when as I was learning to code as a super beginner, it's very similar to writing, like writing a longer form kind of, like whether it's a blog post or an article or something like that. But there's also definitely differences though. And so I'm wondering, so one of the things that I think about is like, okay, in order to write, like to say to write a couple paragraphs, you can take like 15 minutes and you can sit down and maybe write a paragraph or so and then come back to it later and kind of add, and then you can kind of spread it out over a day. Like you could spend 15 minutes on it here and 15 minutes on it there. But I think that for me, that's where coding isn't similar, that I always felt like when I was learning how to do it, I felt like I needed hours of time, like chunks of time to like to sit down and to get in the zone. And then once you're in the zone, you could really crank it out, you know, and get creative and do all this awesome stuff. So in your sort of coding process, when you code, can you do it in smaller chunks of time, or do you feel like you need those longer chunks as well?
I think it's based on the way that you described it, I think it is more similar to writing. And I don't know if that's different after you've been doing it for a while, versus like the beginner experience. I know that writing, you know, I remember like free writing exercises where, you know, you just say, okay, I'm just going to sit for 5 minutes and write whatever comes to mind.
Yeah.
And then a half an hour later, you're like, whoa, where did time go?
Exactly.
And that experience is incredibly similar for me with coding. And I don't know that it's necessarily the challenge of coding, but more how I think and how I work, in that it's hard for me to get started. But once I go, then I'm going and I forget what time it is. And I've definitely had that experience with technology a lot, where I say I'm just going to sit down and just try this one thing, and then 2 hours later I'm like, I solved that problem and I found five more, and now I'm trying to solve those.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that's really interesting to me about coding and learning to code and the way that we approach it is sometimes we're taught to start with the blank page, to start with the framework, maybe like a template, and then fill in pieces. But what's an interesting problem too is there is a lot of code out there. There's a lot of stuff that's already been built. And a bigger problem, especially with companies, is maintaining and updating the code.
Yep.
And so I like to encourage people to look at what's already out there and read through it and try to understand it. So rather than forcing ourselves to sit down and just make something, I think it's just as important to sit down and read, in the same way that you read books before you start to try and write them.
Yep. Yep. Or if there's a website that you really like, take a look at the code. What is it in, I think, in Chrome or whatever, you can right click and you can view source, right? That's really eye-opening, actually. If
And
you're
a lot
out
of
there and
the
you haven't done that before, try right click, you view source on a web page. That's what the code is behind it. At least it'll probably be a lot messier than what the programmer what it looked like, because that's just the code that that's being generated by the by Chrome or whatever. But yeah, but I like that idea of you don't have to start with a blank page.
Even more interesting than viewing source is the inspect element, where you can really get into the developer tools, both in Chrome and Firefox, and I think Internet Explorer or Edge, whatever they call it now, added it as well, where you can really easily change aspects of the code and see the results in real time.
My husband is a former developer. He's an engineering manager now, so he still codes a little bit. And when he has used that from time to time. I'll tell him, I'll be like, "Hun, there's something wrong on the internet. Can you fix it for me?" And he'll come over and he'll do the view source and he'll do that inspect element thing. And I'll be like, "Okay," and it's like, and it almost looks like gobbledygook. It's like a different, like the language thing, right? Like it's a foreign language to me. But I think the more you look at it, the more it makes a lot of sense, and the how powerful it can be too, because there are certain sites where you can you can alter the HTML, as opposed to just doing it in a like if you're making a web page, as opposed to just using the what you see is what you get editor, you can actually go into the HTML, and sometimes it actually works a little bit better. It actually listens better that way when you alter the code, as opposed to trying to center something or something like that.
I've talked to a number of high school teachers about how they're teaching web development or web design, and they're using a lot of them are using what you see is what you get editors, and that's a great way to start to create things on the web, but it's so much more powerful to learn the code and to actually get in there and manipulate things yourself and really control the elements that are going in, because the what you see is what you get editors, they can add so much bloating, extra code that's unnecessary and then does weird things when you try and change it later, and it's just not as clean, and it makes me cringe these days when
I can relate to that a little bit. I don't want to say totally relate to it, but I can certainly relate to that. So as you kind of reflect back on your experience learning to code and where you've come today and all the stuff that you've learned, what's one thing that you learned that you often share with the girls when you're teaching that was like, here, I learned this, and I made these mistakes, maybe, so that you don't have to make them? Is there something that you find yourself repeating a lot, or that's a really powerful message that seems to resonate with them?
I don't have one thing in particular. I think it's part of what I've already talked about in terms of the theme of, technology is affecting everything, and we really need to understand these tools that we're using. My favorite experience was having to open up my laptop for a class. And it terrified me because I had one computer to my name. I was young and not established in my career and taking classes, and could not afford a second computer if I broke it. And my class required that I open up a computer. And I was taking classes online on that computer. So if I broke the computer, I could no longer take the class, and also had to figure out how to pay for a new
And
computer.
just so people, I think I'm following you. I want to make sure. So you don't mean just opening the lid, you mean going inside into the guts.
Yes, I had a screwdriver in hand.
Yes, okay.
The class was about what's inside the computer. So
got it.
I was very, 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 very nervous, and there was a lot of pressure, but I, followed instructions, and I was very careful, and I put everything back, and it turned on, and it worked again. And from that moment, I felt like I could do anything.
Right, exactly. Right. That if you had to, if you have to replace a part, or it is nice to know, like sort of like a car, like I think of the car, you know, there's this black box under the hood, right? That like if something goes wrong and you go and you have to take it to get repaired, you wonder like what really is wrong. I think the same thing with computers too, that sometimes it's a hardware issue and it's not a software issue. Yeah. So knowing that
and
piece
also,
is great.
There's so much dust in computers, not as much in laptops as in the old towers and desktops.
Yes.
But I opened a computer with a friend one time showing him how to do it, and he was like, what's all this dust in here?
Dust bunnies,
that's normal. That's part of why you need to know how to open a computer.
At the very least, to get the dust bunnies out of there.
Yeah.
All right. So let's shift a little bit. I'm going to give you permission to dream a little bit here. I'd like to shift the conversation to talking a little bit about society and culture and the idea of girl geeks. I think that from the way that I see it anyway, I think that we've been making steps, baby steps, but steps toward making the idea of girl geeks at least a little bit more socially acceptable. But I do think we have a longer way to go. So I'd like to hear your thoughts a little bit about that. And also, like, what's your dream in this regard? How do we know when we've won?
it's the idea that girl geek is becoming more socially acceptable is hopefully something that the mainstream is picking up on. I mean, we have more portrayal of girl geeks in the media with shows like Big Bang Theory. But beyond having girl geeks be a part of society, what I really like to see is you don't have to be a geek to like technology.
Mm-hmm.
You know? The Bureau of Labor Statistics says that 80% of all jobs will require use of technology in a year and a half from now. So these are tools that we all need to understand and all need to be comfortable with. And I think that technology has such a broader application than just writing code. You know, as I said, there's so many different aspects to technology, from the hardware to the writing the programs, but also user experience and graphics and animation. And there's aspects of technology that should be appealing to girls without having to be considered a geek.
Yeah. Someone once said to me, all companies are tech companies. Would you agree with that?
especially now, whether you're creating technology or just using it as a tool. It's part of everything now. It's how we're all connected. And I mean, that's going to bring up a whole other area that I'm not an expert in at all, but the access to it, you know, are we as industry really starts using more and more technology to achieve results, who are we leaving out? But that's a good tangent that I'm not going to go down. But I had a great conversation. One of our alumni from Tech Girls, she lives in New Hampshire, and she is a farmer and a technologist. And I was really intrigued by this. And I got to talk to her, and I talked to someone who works for John Deere, and learned that all the different ways that farmers are using technology that personally I'd never considered, because I live in a city, mm-hmm. and I'm very much an urban city girl. But they're doing things like using drones to survey their fields and take photos of their crops from, you know, aerial photos of their crops, so that they can, just by like seeing the color of them, can determine if they're getting enough water and nutrients. There's APIs for farm equipment that programmers are creating ways for people to interact with self-driven tractors from their home. Are some of my favorite examples of how technology is part of everyone's industry these days.
That's a really a great example. Farm tech. Watch out for there's some great stuff happening in farm tech. That's awesome. I love it. So as you were talking about, I totally agree with you that it really shouldn't be that you need to be a geek in order to be good at tech or even to like tech or to be aware of tech. So I wonder what happens to the term geek then? So then what is, so in this sort of dream world, this sort of idealistic world where, tech is a part of everything, and I think we're partially there now already, then what happens to the word geek? What does it mean to be a geek?
That's an interesting question. And I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about the term geek, except from, I think its origin, which comes from like circus and freak shows. But in terms of what our stereotype of a geek is in society, which to me is someone who's very smart and interested in this case, tech and programming and writing code, my hope is that girls would be comfortable self-identifying that way, that they would be comfortable saying, I'm smart, and that's a cool thing, because we still hear from teachers and parents and girls too, that it's not once you get around high school age, it's not cool to be smart, and they shy away from speaking out in class still, and really, really hide that passion that they had just 1 to 2 years before.
Yeah, and I think it's a question for, say, the developmental psychologists about how to deal with that and how to support girls in that evolution across the different ages, right? So from kindergarten, first grade, and elementary school to then, where it seems to be, I have a 7-year-old boy, so I don't know a lot about girls, because I have a boy, but I was a girl that age, growing up. So yeah, I can totally relate to that. That like there's this sort of age range right before middle school, I think it seems to be, where yeah, it's totally okay to like just be passionate about whatever you want and dream as big as you want and to be good at stuff and whatever. And then suddenly around puberty or so, it just sort of that sort of shuts off. And I think part of it is the whole. We're developmentally, we're going through different stuff right there, both socially, but physically as well and emotionally. And then I feel like sometimes a shift happens in high school again, where it's like, okay, maybe it could start to become a little more okay. So I think if as we're thinking about sort of like the intersection of geekdom and being smart and developmental psychology and learning about tech, that there's a lot going on right there, that you probably see the symptoms of whenever you when you're teaching the girls, that it's not just about teaching them the tech stuff, it's about supporting them socially as well.
Yeah, and that's why we've really, with Tech Girls, we have in-person workshops where we put 15 to 20 girls in a room with each other, and that is an incredibly important aspect of our methods, because we're hoping that by getting them in a room with their peers at that early age, before it's not cool to be smart or not cool to like tech, that they'll build those friendships and start to form their own community of girls who like technology, whatever aspect of it they're into, and that hopefully the strength of those friendships will keep that interest alive as they get into high school and give them that bond and that support as people challenge their concepts of what's cool and whether or not they're going to stick with this passion. And I have to say, some really hopeful news about it is that we've started to see high school girls turn around, because now that we've been around for 5 years, we have girls who have attended our workshops in middle school and are now in high school, and they're coming to us and saying, "I want to help. I want to be an instructor."
That's awesome.
Yeah, so
That's great.
we're starting to work with high schools, schools formally, but teenage girls in general, to support them as workshop instructors, so that they can continue to engage with their passion and inspire other girls to pursue technology.
Yeah, and that's only going to get even better as tech girls and other organizations like yours are in existence for longer and longer periods of time. That, you know, so those girls who are high school girls now may end up going to college and then eventually get a job, but they're always going to have that experience with them. And it's always going to be such an important part of their upbringing that there's this sort of feeling of, I want to give back and I want to do for those girls what you did for me. So that's really, it's inspiring and it's empowering and it's truly awesome to hear that. So that's great. Yeah. All right. So I am going to shift to the final question now, which I ask pretty much everyone who is on the podcast, which is, what is your biggest people-related challenge in your job? And I will let you interpret that however you'd like. So your biggest people-related challenge.
So we are a nonprofit organization, and we rely very heavily on volunteers to make these workshops happen for girls. The hardest part of that is, well, the great part is that everybody wants to help. Yeah. Everyone is so inspired and thinks that, you know, it's such a great mission to help girls engage with technology, and they really want to help. But we all have such little time. And I think that especially in the world of technology, as there are more and more demands for technology that works, technology that exceeds expectations, but still not a ton of people to make that technology, we're asking a lot of the people who know enough to help. There's a lot of people who want to learn more, who want to do more with technology, but we're not quite there yet. And so between conferences and coming up with new solutions and then asking people to volunteer their time to lead a workshop and share what they know and what they love about technology with others, in this case, middle school girls, it's tough to find the time to make that effort.
Yeah. So do you find that people are just calling you? So how does it usually work? I'm assuming it works from both ends, right? So that you probably have people who are just coming through you organically or through referrals. But then I'm also assuming that you have your own sort of outreach and marketing as well.
Yeah. It is both. It works in both directions. We fortunately have a lot of people who are finding us online through searches. A lot of people who are connecting with us on our social media, sign up to volunteer, sign up for access to the Tech Shops in a Box program, and are expressing interest and raising their hand in that way. And we are, you know, doing our best to support them and help them find the resources that they need to run a workshop. And the resources, again, being people, because most people can find a space. You use like a conference room or something.
Yep.
We figured out that it takes anywhere between 6 to 10 hours to prepare for and lead the workshop. Mm-hmm. But you know, between your own personal demands of work and life and family and other obligations and other fun activities too, it can be hard to pull it together or hard to really stick with it and make that time and take that initiative beyond just contacting us, but take the initiative to actually go find the space and schedule the workshop and learn the material, just, you know, which takes a couple of hours. It's not huge. It's a 3-hour workshop, introductory level topic. So it's not like you need to prepare a semester of classes.
Yeah. So that's a good sell for professors or faculty. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it takes, you know, you have to have that initiative and that drive yourself, and also find a few other people to help you. And then they need to have that initiative and that time as well to come together. And we usually have about 5 people involved in a workshop, 1 for logistics, 1 for the instructor, and 2 to 3 teaching assistants. The good news is that it's so much fun that people want to do it again, usually.
Oh, that's great. I was going to ask how many people do it, about around what percentage people do it one time versus more than once.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense of that?
I don't have good numbers on that right now. I know we had about 150 people volunteered in some aspect last school year. Mm-hmm. We had 2,700 girls attend a workshop last year, yeah. And it was a total of, it was over 100 workshops. Yeah. I'd say at least half of them were done by second time volunteers.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a testament to, okay, you get over the hump. Okay. I get that this is going to take whatever it takes, 6 to 10 hours of my time and me reaching out and making phone calls and getting it all together. But at the end of the day, there's got to be something that they're getting out of it, right? that makes them want to do it again. And I think that's it's a powerful message, because especially when you're talking in the non-profit world, the for-profit world, right? Yeah. Where we're talking about saying, trying to get somebody to purchase something again, yes, they get an outcome from it, but it's different, right? It's volunteering your time in return for what, as something more, much more intangible, versus getting some service in exchange for a service or in exchange for some product. And so it can be hard to quantify, but also just to even put your finger on what is that intangible thing that I'm getting out of this.
I'm glad you talked about like sales in the for-profit world, because that is actually how we approach our outreach.
Yeah.
It's sales of a free product, which sounds like incredibly easy. And at the start it is, and then it's the follow through that can be the challenge. But what's really neat is we've been able to start to quantify tangible benefits in addition to the, it feels good to share what you love with somebody else and to inspire them to pursue your own passion of technology. You know, companies who are running these workshops, this is essentially free marketing for them. Mm-hmm. You know, we publicize any workshop that's being run on our website and our social media, and the girls that are attending, they have parents, and if those parents are your market for your own product, you know, there's an audience right there.
Yep.
For schools, universities, as well as the high schools, it's a recruiting tool. One of the local high schools here that ran workshops, they had new students enroll in their school because they ran those workshops.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. If you think big picture, long term, right, that you may not see the payoff right away, but you may start to see more, for example, more sales or more sales leads coming in if you're a for-profit company in terms of the free market, or right, you might start seeing more people enrolling or more people interested in tech programs at a college or a university or whatever.
It is long term, but you know, we've had a couple of companies say to us like, well, these girls are in middle school, they can't do an internship, and they're not going to be working here for many years. Mm-hmm. But we always cite that Bureau of Labor Statistics again, that in 2020, there's going to be 1.4 million jobs in technology, and we will not be able to fill those jobs with the current graduation rate. And even if we filled all the visas, there's still way more need for people with technology-related skills than we'll ever be able to fill. So we need more. Like your workforce is not going to exist if you don't encourage girls to engage with technology at an early age.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's something to say. Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a really good point there. Right. Yeah. You had said something earlier about free, that the idea of this is free, right? It's freely available. So you think it's easy, but it's actually not, right? Because you're still, I mean, I have a free course. I have a free online course on PeopleSec Academy. And so I like the idea of sort of sharing something with the world for free to give people not only a taste of what it is I do, but also to get some small value out of it, and to be free. But there's still marketing that's involved in that. There's still outreach. It's not if you build it, they will come. Even with something like, where so many people recognize the need to expose boys and girls to technology and to getting those skills built, that you that, that there's the sell that needs to happen, because you are still spent you are still asking people to spend their time on these kinds of things, and time is precious, time is money, as some people say. But I think that that kind of that's a little bit too simplistic for me, right? Time is a lot more than that. It does mean spending time does mean potentially more money, but it also means all of those intangibles. And I love that that Tech Girls is moving toward essentially showing the ROI on this, the time investment, at least, right? If there's no monetary investment, there's at least the time investment. So what's the return on your time investment for this?
Yeah. And another sort of great thing and positive thing that's been happening that we've been hearing about is technology companies in particular are recognizing that need for the intangible, for their employees in particular. I've heard of companies that require 80% productivity during the week and also mandate 20% of either community service or professional development.
Yep.
And it's so good that companies are not only allowing, but essentially requiring their employees to give back to the community. And really building that into the work week. And it's great for the community and as well for the employees to get that satisfaction that their company values them as a person, recognizes their need to have that intangible satisfaction, and to do something that feels good.
Yeah.
It's so good to see the girls' reactions as they like open up a computer and go, that's what's inside, or as they like come up with these creative ideas of what they think a computer will look like, you know, in 5 or 10 years from now. And I'll just say that almost every example involved a 3D hologram.
Ah, yes, I like that.
Yeah.
And their ability to sort of think literally outside of the box, because we live in this sort of box, right? Especially as you get older, right? So this is what's possible. But they don't even know, right? And they haven't, you know, especially the older you are, you sort of transition from this time when technology wasn't as big and computers in general, right? You know, I grew up when smartphones weren't even a thing, and now the kids growing up today, they don't even know a world where smartphones didn't exist, right?
Yeah.
Or an example I like to give too is like the job that my husband has now, engineering manager, a manager of software developers, right? That job, it didn't even exist. We wouldn't even known it would have existed the day that he was born. Right, because we didn't have that. And so just to think forward, you know, into the next 10, 15, you know, 30 plus years, what that's going to do, and to doing everything we can to feed that pipeline and to feed that innovation and disruption and all of the wonderful stuff that needs to happen in order to stay on top of it all.
Yeah, I think it's so valuable to really listen to the kids as for those reasons that you cited, because they can think outside the box. And we ran a What's Inside a Computer workshop where they did that design thinking exercise about how do you want to interact with a computer. And it was done at a hardware company. And the employees from the hardware company were helping out at the workshop. I'm like, are you guys taking notes? Because this is your next project. Okay, here's your innovation right here, your market research.
There you go. Absolutely.
And it may be 10 years before these middle school girls are going to be in the workforce driving innovation, but they are going to be the ones driving innovation. And we may as well start listening to them now and working on the ideas that they have so that we can be ready to support them as they grow up and become leaders in technology.
That's right. And with that point, we are just about up on time. And so, Sarah, it was absolutely wonderful chatting with you. Some wonderful stuff we uncovered and talked about today. So I appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Okay, thanks very much.
And that wraps up another episode of the PeopleStack podcast. Check out my website, jenbunk.com. That's JenBunk.com, where you can find lots of goodies, including a link to PeopleStack Academy, my online school dedicated to helping the tech community build better people processes. Also on JenBunk.com, you can sign up for the Change Log, the PeopleStack weekly email with tips and exclusive offers only available to my email tribe. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.